thank you guys all for coming to the first session of the Intel Hub for 2018. For this discussion today, we have representatives from one of our affiliate journals presenting. We've got Dr. Melissa Schneider, who will be joining us shortly, and Dr. Matt Crofton will be discussing global security and the Global Security and Intelligence Studies Journal. The peer-reviewed open access publication published by the Policy Studies Organization on behalf of the American Public University System. Topics to be covered include an overview of the journal's aims and scope, the types of submissions accepted, examples of submissions, and guidelines for contributors. I wanted to do a little short bio for each of our presenters today. Dr. Melissa Schneider is an associate professor of the International Relations and Global Security Program in the School of Security and Global Studies at American Public University System. Her focus is on European Union politics, the politics of immigration and asylum, and the political participation of non-state actors in national and supranational policymaking processes. Dr. Matt Crofton is a senior faculty for the doctoral programs in global security and strategic intelligence at American Military University. He has published in top-tier journals that has impacted real-world decision-making in the U.S. and beyond. His established work in cyber has made required reading lists at U.S. Cybercom and Israel's Mossad. A piece, Soft Spying, is required reading at the U.S. Army War College, and Nemesis is highlighted on the Journal of Record for the Russian Military of Foreign Affairs. He's an accomplished author with works published in multiple languages. He also serves as vice chairman at moderndiplomacy.eu, where his passion for mentoring has resulted in more than 60 young Global South scholars and practitioners becoming published authors. So, Dr. Crofton, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you at this point in time, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Dr. Drumhill. Some of this is going to be a little bit on the fly in the sense that my wonderful peer and the editor-in-chief of the Journal for Global Security and Intelligence Study, Dr. Schneider, got called away at the last minute for a very important reason. Hopefully she'll be able to join us. One of the things that I was really set to discuss was more about what our hopes are for the journal as far as the aims and the scope and the reach. We're more than happy, of course, to share this PowerPoint presentation with anyone, and as Dr. Drumhiller mentioned, it's being recorded, so you'll have full access to all this information. So what Dr. Schneider and I really wanted to do today in this presentation is sort of talk about maybe the bigger picture and not just sort of drone through the slides necessarily. Ultimately, we see the journal having multiple purposes. We don't want to sit and simply be quote-unquote, just another intelligence studies journal. So we're trying to do that by tackling the discipline from multiple perspectives and multiple approaches. And that's that also not only on the horizontal level, but also on the vertical level. So we have what you would expect of any great peer-reviewed, scholarly, theoretical, and policy-oriented journal, which is what we're trying to be. We're not trying to be one thing. We're trying to be all of them. So we will have the peer-reviewed blind process of accepting submissions. The process of that is in this presentation, and you're more than welcome to move forward with it after our presentation to look exactly what we're required. But we also want to explore the opportunities of having things that are not overly historical based, which sometimes tends to be something in intelligence studies that I think is considered de facto necessary when you look at scholarly publications in intelligence studies, that if it's not foundationally historical, you're somehow missing the boat on something. We're not necessarily trying to endorse that preconceived or predetermined notion as far as how you approach your studies and your research in this. We will ultimately have biannual publication schedules. So we have the spring-summer issue, the fall-winter issue, February 1st deadline for the spring and summer, August 1st deadline in the fall-winter. This is a really ambitious endeavor put out by us in the sense that by the institution itself, in that it's not always easy to get a journal up off the ground, get it to the necessary point within the discipline so that people see it as this is something really valuable. One of the efforts we're trying to do sort of on the side is have this ultimately be both Web of Science and Scopus indexed. So we are also very, very conscious of the fact that we want people to submit things to us, and they know that if they get accepted into the Global Security Intelligence Studies Journal, that it will have something that will have weight, it will have impact factor. It is something they will gladly and proudly be able to put on their resume, on their vita, in terms of promotion and evaluation and moving forward in their own tenure review process. So we're absolutely conscious of that on the purely logistical professional level, but we're also more excited about what we hope we can do with the journal moving forward. And that's basically, as you see in the slide right now, it's a really passion project for us about bridging this gap between academics and practitioners. We sort of work against what we consider to be a false wall between academics and practitioners, where they all do their own thing within their own kingdom, within their own fiefdoms. Once in a while, they might come together with a particular conference or a particular event or meeting, and then they retreat back to their respective fiefdoms and kingdoms again. We hope the journal can operate as a platform and a landing space for both communities to openly interact, and ideally, it might be a launching point for them to start collaborating and learn what each other is doing and be able to move forward. There we go. I lost my connection for a second, but now it's back again. The target audience, literally, we want to be as broad and deep as possible. We are for the specialists. We want the specialists to take us seriously and see the submissions as something that they will gain knowledge from, and see the submissions as clearly contributing to the bodies of knowledge in both global security and intelligence studies. But we also want the pieces to be attractive to a broad non-specialist audience, that anyone who picks up the journal will get something out of the articles that are read. We're not trying to produce writers or create submissions that when a quote-unquote regular person or non-specialist reads it, literally within the first two pages, they have no idea what they're reading or what the point is. We're very much a populist publication, if I can use that term in that sense, because we want to spread the relevance and the reach and the significance of the disciplines beyond just our own specialized areas in terms of the academic community. One of the things we also have to do is this broad range, when we talked about, we've had some recent additions. It's part of our own little attempt to be innovative in the sense that we don't want the journal just to copy or mirror, structurally speaking, what other intelligence studies or security journals do. So we want to have voices from the field, which would be literally a section of having practitioners who are out there gainfully employed and in the muck, if you will, of doing the things of global security and intelligence studies, being able to talk to what their experiences are, what are the challenges they face, what advice or mentorship might they be able to give. We want people to, in the beginning of their careers, also see the journal as a valuable source of insight and information in that. Emerging scholars is something really, the last two emerging scholars and policy commentaries are really, really important to me. Again, a sort of pet project of my own career, in the fact that one of the great frustrations I had, I'll freely admit, as a graduate student at Brown University, was I was involved in lots of research projects with very senior professors, and I was very excited to do it, very eager and very ambitious, but never really got the opportunity or the chance to have my own work or the contributions that I made to those projects actually be formally acknowledged. I don't say that with any bitterness or resentment, but it was just what the traditional structure was of graduate school at that point in time. I'd like to see the journal for emerging scholars, young scholars starting their careers off, be able to see us as a place that looks positively upon them, that we're not hierarchical in terms of submissions, and that we're hoping to make a big splash with big names only, and so if you're trying to get your foot in the door, we're not a place welcome for you. That's not true at all. So we really hope emerging scholars, and in that level, it comes across two different aspects. First, in the idea of young people starting their career. Second, outside of the West. I'm really, really intrigued by, not divisive in the purposeful, determined way, but there is a division, I feel, between quote-unquote Western scholars and Western specialists of global security and intelligence, and how much opportunity they have to interact and be aware of the really great work that's going on all around the world outside of the West. We're looking very hard at opportunities and methods and approaches to be able to attract some of those emerging scholars that are outside of the traditional countries and institutes that you would expect to hear and see from. And I think that's starting already to bear some early fruit, and I'm only really, really excited to look forward to where that might go in the future. So if the Journal of Global Security and Intelligence Studies in the end is seen as a place where you get to hear not just the traditional voices that we want to hear and always expect to hear from, but you also get to see a lot of new voices, a lot of new faces coming from places that you don't know about or didn't expect to see, I think that's really, really exciting and something that will really distinguish the journal and the contributors to the journal in terms of our brother, sister publications and competitors in the field. The last part, policy commentary. We openly embrace the fact that while we want the peer-reviewed, blind, scholarly contributions to be things that are absolutely meant to be contributions to the body of knowledge and pushing the discipline forward and getting its acknowledgement and its recognition as a legitimate academic discipline on par with formal security studies, formal IR scholars, that's very important to us. We hope to make this journal another cog in that wheel that tries to establish that legitimacy for our disciplines as academicians. But we still openly embrace the fact that policy impact, real-world relevance, that we're writing about things that really are not just reflective of what's going on today, but hopefully impact and influences the people who make true decisions, you know, on the world level, whether it be diplomacy, military, economics, politics, the entire gamut. So there's going to be one section coming up in the future editions where these are shorter pieces and meant to be not peer-reviewed in the sense of they'll go through editorial review at home with us, the home institution, but they're not meant to be sent out. They're meant to be very topical, very timely, right now, happening right now as far as what's going on, and giving a sense of the everyday issues. I think one of the most powerful things we've found as educators and scholars in this field is it's always been a wonderful thing to be able to show the people we work with, the students we're meant to train and mentor, that all the amazing, high-level, highly intellectual and rigorous pieces touch back into the real world and the things that they could see every single day just clicking through Yahoo News or any other kind of online commentary. They're going to find connections between the highly intellectual and the everyday common contemporary issues that take place in the world. And we want the journal ultimately to house both opportunities. So that this is a great opportunity. I think this is a fantastic chance for young, especially advanced graduate students, if they want to be able to take, not necessarily take a break from the heavy-duty research that they're pursuing, whether at the doctoral level or the master's level, but it's an opportunity where something hits them, something strikes them that they just noticed. It's in their field, but not necessarily connected to a master's thesis or a doctoral dissertation, but it's in their area of research, and they have strong opinions about it. We'd like to hear from them as far as giving a policy commentary on what's going on, giving a little view. There's two purposes for that, not only just to give, slowly start getting a sort of knowledge production reputation for these young emerging scholars and their field, to give them a chance to get their name out in print, online, as a sense of accomplishing something beyond the large-scale projects that they're undertaking at the master's and doctoral level, and get their appetite whetted, if you will, for success in the publishing sense, which is something I think is really, really important when scholars are young and trying to finish their degrees, to be able to see their name up there in print. I think we shouldn't underestimate how impactful that can be and how much that can be a boon to their future productivity and their future research passion, even if the policy commentaries, again, are not meant to be 8,000 words, peer-reviewed, blind, take 4 to 5 months to get back through the process. These are meant to be incredibly fast, incredibly timely, written in compelling, interesting ways for just the regular reader, maximum maybe 1,500 to 2,000 words. And hopefully, the other thing I hope it will do is have an opportunity to create new ideas. I've sort of unofficially, in my own mind, called the policy commentaries, idea generators. That idea generators, because it's happened for me a lot, just happened upon reading a short little piece that isn't meant to be a giant scholarly thing generates new ideas in my own head of like, oh, I really am interested in the India-Iran connection, and here's something that shows me a way to where I can start that research and start digging deeper. I think these policy commentaries can definitely serve that avenue for young and old scholars alike, advanced and novice, tenured experienced professors and people not even out of graduate school yet. Hopefully the policy commentaries will have the same purpose for them and the same opportunity. Again, we have a deadline for August 1st for the fall-winter issue. I know on February 27th that may seem like a long way away, but trust me, it goes very, very fast. And when we need time really to prepare. With all of these different sections we're hoping to do, it's a little bit more complicated in terms of the production of each individual issue. So the more types of diverse materials we get, the more excited we are, and we really are an open, sort of embracing editorial team, if you will, and Dr. Schneider would definitely, I think, affirm this idea. We're interested in being a different type of journal in global security and intelligence studies, in that it, not to insult any other fantastic journal, but we want to go beyond the standard formal scholarly articles. We want that to be maybe half of what each issue is, and the other half to be hitting the field and the discipline in all these fascinating ways that we've been discussing so far. Again, we have the website where you can act. The submission guidelines I'm really not going to spend a lot of time on. There's no gotcha moment in our submission guidelines. I think anyone who's familiar, even remotely familiar with the submission process, won't find anything odd or strange in that process. So that's about it, really, as far as that I was. We can really do the questions to come in and talk more about what the bigger hopes and dreams of the journal might be for all of us involved in Intel Hub.
Thanks for that discussion, Dr. Crofton. We have
Dr. Schneider's on now.
Melissa, is there anything that stands out to you specific to the journal that you want to convey?
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much, Nicole, and sorry for joining a bit late this morning. Thanks, Dr. Crofton, for handling that. I think you communicated the aim and scope of the journal quite well. I think what I want to reiterate is a point that Dr. Crofton just made about this journal, the work that we're doing here. We intend for this to go beyond simply another peer-reviewed publication out there. We want this to be a forum for practitioners to engage with the academic community and vice versa. We see a role for graduate students in this journal as well in terms of providing an outlet for advanced research and for feedback from the community. And so those are the points that I would really want to reiterate, and I hope everybody leaves the discussion with a good sense of how this journal is perhaps different from what's already out there.
Thanks for that, Dr. Schneider. I'm looking, there's a message in the chat. You're also thinking in terms of broad understanding of security, human security, and et cetera, correct?
That is correct.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I believe very strongly in that, in the sense that I don't think we can be in the business or should be in the business, at whether it's global security exclusively or intelligence studies exclusively, to limit ourselves as what we cover, because I have always been in the school of thought that if you look around the world and see what's happening that's relevant in terms of political, economic, military, diplomatic, human security, humanitarian impact, all of it matters to us. There's always an easy connection and bridge to get into our area of the world and where our academic interests are. So I know for a fact that at least I'm very eager to see submissions of all types that would cover the gamut, and that would be another way for us to distinguish ourselves from the other journals in the field, in the sense that we are a very wide open, embracing editors, editorial team, in terms of the submissions we'd like to see and the content coverage we'd like to have within each edition.
And I would agree with that. I think that, you know, if you think about global security and what that means, it's not one-dimensional, it's multi-dimensional, and we want to capture that in the types of submissions that we're accepting and putting out there through the journal. So, you know, we can think of security in traditional, quote-unquote, traditional terms in terms of state security and all of the things that come along with that, but also human security, the human dimension to security, and some of these global issues that touch upon human security. We're interested in publishing articles that touch upon that dimension as well.
So for some of the graduate students that are out there, can you guys provide some tips for submissions and maybe talk about some of the challenges that you've seen with some submissions coming through? I know you guys get to see everything that comes through, so maybe a good overview is helpful, because I think that this is going to be really valuable. I plan to push this out to my graduate students, and it might be something that Mark and Ruben can also utilize as well. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, Dr. Crofton, you can add to this perhaps, but what I tend to see in terms of the biggest challenge for graduate students is, what we don't want to do is take a seminar paper and simply submit it as is to the journal, because the bar is higher when you're submitting an article for peer review. What has to happen first is that the editorial staff has to look at the article and determine that it's ready to be sent out for peer review. So it's not, it's not automatic that if you submit something, it's just going to be sent out. It has to go through one round of, we have to look at it first and determine that it's appropriate to be sent out. And in order to meet those criteria, I think a good strategy is to perhaps, look through a journal that you like, that you're interested in, and take some note of how the articles that are being published in that journal are structured. And you'll notice that there is some formula to that. So, I think in academia we tend to be a little bit conservative when it comes to being formulaic in terms of the articles that get published for peer review. That's not to say there's no place for creativity, but you want to make sure that you're hitting, you're hitting the major areas that we're going to be looking at. So you want a tight introduction. That problem statement has to be very, very clear, and it has to be very clear what the contribution to the field is from the research that you're submitting. Another shortcoming that I sometimes see is, how to put this, the review of the existing literature is sometimes not as thorough as it needs to be sent out for peer review. So we want to see a very thorough review of the existing research that's been done on your problem, where the gaps are, and how your submission can contribute to filling a gap in knowledge or in practice. From there, there needs to be some sort of original analysis. So whether that's qualitative, quantitative, it doesn't matter. The method has to be clear. The research design it has to be good. It has to be clear what the research design was and how you came to the conclusions. And so those are, I think, some of the points to pay attention to as you're taking perhaps an existing seminar paper and building on it, revising it for submission for peer review.
I'm glad Dr. Schneider took that part, because it's the other part that I wanted to add my two cents to, and I have a more positive poly perspective on this, hopefully, especially for graduate students, I'm thinking, because my biggest issue I have found, the biggest challenge to overcome, well, I think what Dr. Schneider has mentioned are incredibly important, sort of the nuts and bolts approach and methods of how to successfully submit, especially in terms of the peer-reviewed part of the journal. I really would encourage the graduate students in all the programs connected to our institutions on Intel Hub to look at the other sections as well and not consider them as a lesser than option or a not high as highly thought of option, because Dr. Branham has mentioned about there's some pushback from other Intel journals, felt like our area is saturated. I would actually agree with that to a point. I think our area is saturated with journals who all do the same thing, that are just sort of simply formulaically moving through the structural process of publishing an intelligence and security journal, and they all look the same. That's why I find the other aspects that we discussed earlier this morning to the Global Security Intelligence Studies Journal is so unique, because I don't see commentaries from the field, policy analysis, the opportunity to I forgot to mention that those sections have a much quicker turnaround than our than the peer-reviewed process. We hope to have a relatively speaking quick process regardless, as far as peer review and getting work back to authors, so that they don't have to wait a year to see if whether this works or not works. But the stuff that deals with notes from the field, policy commentaries, emerging scholarly work, that stuff I think will be much, much faster. So I always found the biggest challenge with young, talented, but still in the novice stage graduate students is they sort of reject themselves. Dr. Branham had a question about how important it is to get them to not take rejection so personally. But I find one of the bigger issues is not that they're not getting rejection from other people, that they're not even getting to that stage to be rejected, because they've sort of self-rejected first. Is all my work's not good enough? Well, we're trying to offer other opportunities within each edition of the journal to be able to have graduate students think, well, I can definitely produce something for that, and it will have an impact. It will still be intellectually rigorous. It just won't be as long. It'll still be intriguing and well-written to make people want to reach out to me and create new possible projects out of that. That's really what I'm excited about as far as those shorter, non-peer-reviewed sections, because I think they're ideal as new platforms for graduate students to get their feet wet in a less intimidating, less daunting, and less impatient way. To see their work get out there in the field and have people already start taking notice of their name. So the biggest challenge I'd like to overcome in graduate students is actually just getting them to have the ambition to go ahead and submit and not be afraid to do it in all the various sections and sectors that we're going to be developing within each edition.
Dr. Crossing, you bring up some great points. I know one thing in particular that I think happens a lot is when someone gets that review and resubmit, they don't follow up, and they're losing that opportunity, that it is not an outright rejection, but that there is interest in their piece. One of the things also in the chat is, do you guys have any advice or any additional resources for students when it comes to, if they have a course paper that they're really keen on and they think that they can move it forward into an article? What are some things that you like to tell your students on how those two pieces look different?
I think one of the things Dr. Schneider already just mentioned is really informative, and I find that even professionals tend to not do this enough, quite frankly, is we fall in love with a project that we're doing, and we think after it's done, okay, now where do I want to shop this piece? Where does it belong in terms of possibly being published? I've actually had great success myself in the past by actually thinking about that a little bit beforehand. So if we get people, and hopefully that's where ultimately our own journal will rise to that level, that people will say, well, I'm writing this piece for Global Security Intelligence Studies. I want it in that journal. If you know that already, then what Dr. Schneider mentioned is really important. Go to the website of these particular journals, see the articles that have been published in the past, and make comparison between, okay, if I'm starting off with what was a really great course paper, how do I move that up to the next level? I just think it's just grunt work of seeing what's been successful in the journals you're actually interested in and making comparisons yourself. And we're very open and pretty fast as far as turnaround time in terms of communication too. I'm always more than happy to receive emails from potential contributing authors saying, this is what I'm interested in, would this be of relevance to the journal, would the journal like to see a submission in this, or I'm having I'm having trouble with this, and they just ask for advice straight up. I know we're all very busy, but that type of extra effort on the part of an author, I always look favorably upon and always usually do my best to answer as credibly and sincerely as I can.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. And I think another area to pay attention to in terms of, you know, taking that seminar paper and maybe revising it and turning it into something that could be submitted for peer review is just something to keep in mind. Seminar papers, we tend to bite off a lot. We tend to go broad. In a journal article, you need to be very, very specific. So, you know, not always, but usually what we're looking at is a, you know, it's much more specific than what we would think of as a traditional or a typical seminar paper might be. So, you know, it's not uncommon to, you know, to review papers that look at, you know, they're adding something very narrow and very specific, but it's enough to advance knowledge forward in that particular area. So it might be one or two variables that have been omitted, for example, from previous analyses that, you know, adding to that body of knowledge, if we consider these extra variables, can really make an impact. So, you know, it's trying to take those broad ideas and make them specific enough that they make a contribution to the literature.
I think also there's a funny analogy I can use for this with that compares to I had my doctoral dissertation actually ended up being published as my first book, but the hard advice I got from the publisher at the time after they decided to offer a contract was I was like, well, what's the first steps? I'm so excited. This is fantastic. And they said, well, what you need to do first is take all of the dissertation ease out of this so we can make it actually a book manuscript. There's a certain analogy to that in the sense of for students, advanced students, when they say, well, how do I turn a course paper into a really fit-for-review scholarly article? There might be an aspect of that. Well, we have to take some of the course paper ease out of that and then just focus on, as what Dr. Schneider mentioned, the original contribution, the relevance to the field, the contribution to theory and the discipline overall, and not remove those parts that I was satisfying the requirements of a course assignment, quote unquote, because those parts usually aren't that relevant and not helpful to an author submitting to a journal.
Thank you guys for that. So one thing that I've been thinking about that might be good for the people to come in and view this after the fact is I've seen journals that will have guest editors for special issues. So what's your policy regarding that? And if somebody's got an idea, how would you pitch that to a journal? Or how would you pitch that to this journal?
Well, I think that's very exciting. We're, you know, always open to the idea of guest editors and special issues. And it's, you know, it's also an impetus for that might be if you're presenting, you know, if you're organizing a panel, for example, at a conference, and you've got three or four other colleagues who are writing papers with you all on the same theme, that would be a good way to create a special issue, for example. So, you know, it's sort of the same way you might go about proposing a panel at a conference. You might go about proposing a guest editorship or special issue for the journal. So, you know, what are the themes that you want to cover? Why are they important? Why would they be of interest to the readership? And then, you know, what potential papers might we publish along those lines?
I'd like to add to that. I've always swung back and forth on a pendulum on this issue, actually, because on the one hand, I really do love special issues, but I've often been confused, and I'd be happy to hear anyone else's opinion on this if they want to venture it out for me to know, is that there's definitely two approaches to doing special issues. The traditional approach to me has always been well-established journals like doing special issues because there's already a built-in audience that follows the journal and relies on the journal anyway. So any kind of special edition is undoubtedly already in tune with its audience to begin with, and so it's sort of a built-in self-marketing campaign, if you will, as far as the relevance of that special issue. There's another more novel approach, which is where we by default would have to be in because we're so young and still building and emerging, is that you can potentially, some people will argue that you can use special issues to build those core audiences. In other words, we decide maybe there are four or five core areas within global security and intelligence that we think will always remain important, will always consistently return in different forms, but will always be incredibly relevant, and we want to be known as the home for those special issues, and you start building your notoriety and your recognition and your audience that way. That's the less traditional, maybe more innovative way to build a journal's impact, but it's interesting and intriguing to me.
So there's a question in the chat, guys. Do you guys have a need for peer reviewers? And if so, if there's any particular areas, and then I could also add on to that, what would be the process for people to become a peer reviewer for the journal?
Yes, we are always in need of peer reviewers. I think it pretty much covers the gamut in terms of areas of specialization. So, we get submissions on all, pretty much a full range of topics covering human security, covering state security. So the sky's the limit, really. We're looking for peer reviewers within all areas of specialization. So, you know, if you think that your area of expertise could align well with, global security broadly conceived, then contact myself, contact Dr. Crofton, and we can get you into the system. We'll register you into the system that we use to review manuscripts and put you in there as a peer reviewer. And, yeah, we would love that. We would absolutely love volunteer peer reviewers to help us, sift through some of the work that comes into the journal.
And that's just an eternal issue, and I think an eternal dilemma for every journal that has ever existed. I would love to sit at the feet of any editor-in-chief if they could actually come to me and say, oh, my problem is I have too many peer reviewers. I can't give them enough work. I have never literally come across anyone who has ever, ever said that. So beggars can't be choosers in that sense, since we're casting such a broad and wide net for where our interests are in terms of submissions that would be worthy of the Journal of Global Security and Intelligence Studies, the need to constantly increase and constantly attract people willing to peer review is always going to be important, because the more we can have, the less it will ever be like a burden to our consistent peer reviewers, because we don't ever want to overuse or overemphasize and make them feel as if we're taking advantage. So the need to have people willing to step forward and contribute. The peer review process is obviously incredibly, it's the lifeblood of an academic, of an intellectual journal, and there's just never, ever enough voices willing to review. So
if you're interested in being a peer reviewer, I think, if you can contact one of us, send us a copy of your CV, and highlight any particular area of expertise that you'd like to be considered for, and we'll get you in the system.
I went ahead and put Matt's email address up in the in the chat for you guys, so you can save for yours, just to make it easy.
Let the avalanche come.
I see that Allison's typing in the chat. Perfect. Do we have any other questions out there about the journal of this current journal, or any other questions specific to publishing that you might want to ask some people that are in the thick of it when it comes to receiving journal submissions and reviewing them and et cetera?
While we're waiting for hopefully other questions, I'd like to just throw in as well. One of the things I've mentioned how excited I am about the fact that we're interested in a broad and deep but diverse array of submissions in terms of what their purpose is and what they serve as far as function within the journal. It matters not just for making us unique and setting us apart from other journals in the field, no matter how broadly you define that field as far as potential competitor journals. I have really honestly in my own life experience, my own professional experience, I have found really great value. We how do we develop those other sections, the sections beyond the traditional peer review scholarly contribution? they're based, for me, they were really based on the things that when you're involved in global security and intelligence studies, I believe you're better off for your own career and for your impact and for the development of your personal network and the reach you want to have all around the globe. The more ways that you can contribute to the field, the more ways you can get your name legitimately seen as far as knowledge production, the better off it is. The better off it is for your career, the better off it is for your profile, the better off it is for your portfolio. If you just simply focus, and we still to a certain extent, not us of course, at APIS, but I find there are still lots and lots of traditional graduate programs that sort of feed a very, very traditional publishing path to their young graduate students, that if you're not aiming for high-level theory, intellectually top-tier one scholarly journals, and that's all you should be focused on, and if you don't get there, your efforts and your contributions are useless. I have honestly always found that to be not true in the fields of global security and intelligence studies. Some of the smaller pieces I've written, or the purely policy-oriented pieces, or even just the op-ed commentaries, have actually generated more buzz and created more connections for collaboration and more opportunities for future research than some of my bigger, more theoretical, formally scholarly, top-tier journal publications. So what I really love about what we're doing with the journal is giving sections for all of these types of engagement, this sort of educational intellectual engagement. They all will have value for people in the field who want to create this as their career.
Yeah, I would agree that that's right on in terms of networking and having an impact and getting your name out there. I think that's great. And some of the non-peer-reviewed formats, you know, if you submit to those, eventually that may, you know, with some revision and some tweaking, that could, you know, you could take a piece from there and turn it eventually into a peer-reviewed submission as well. So, you know, these non-peer-reviewed formats are good in their own right, but they could also lead to peer-reviewed publications potentially down the road.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys for coming today. It was really a great opportunity to hear more about the journal and to give you an opportunity to really feature it within the Intel Hub. We're looking forward to doing the same thing with our other two collaborating journals this year, so that way we can continue the relationships that we have across our campuses. Moving forward, I just want to let everybody know that our next meeting is going to be on March 21st, where we're going to have Dr. Jan Goldman present on intelligence and ethics. So we look forward to having you all attend, and thank you so much. If you have any follow-up questions, you can go ahead and shoot myself a message, and I will make sure that it gets to the proper people. So thank you all for coming today.
Thank you very much.